Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. We were discussing the Supreme Lord, he makes contact with Maya by glancing at her. But unlike the rest of us, his perception is not disturbed by this. Maya does not actually have influence on him. But Sri Shukadeva Goswami, about the same form of Sankarsana that he's discussing in this context in the fifth canto, calls it tamasi form. And Yuga Goswami gives the explanation. It doesn't really mean that he's affected by tamas. But he controls the mode of tamas. And the destruction of the universe comes through his expansion, Lord Shiva. Now, there are descriptions in the Skanda Purana and other tamasic Puranas describe it. Days of Brahma in which Lord Vishnu hides his glories and seems to not be supreme. This is actual events that occur on these tamasic and rajasic days, and it appeals to people who are influenced by those modes, but still, those Puranas are still authoritative. They're describing real events. All the Puranas are spoken by Ugrashrava Suta Goswami at Naimisharanya, all of them. So they're all authoritative. Still, the Vaishnavas should only take that much information from these other Rajasic and Tamasic Puranas that is in accordance with the principles of the Supreme Lord's devotional service and not take anything else. Last we read the statement from Lord Shiva telling his son Kartikeya, only that much from the Shaivite scriptures should be accepted, which fits the conclusions of the Vaishnava scriptures.
Excuse me, sir.
Okay, now we're up to 29.5.
Padma Patala Konda Vaishaka Mahatmye Cha Vyamohaya Chada Chadasya Jagataste Purana Gamaha.
I put a bar in there. It's two halves of a verse, two quarters of a verse should be split. And slash. Okay, I'll read it one more time.
Vyamohaya chara charasya jagataste puranagamaha
ityuktam. There is also a statement in the Vaishaka Mahatmya of the Padma Purana's Patala Kunda. These various Puranas and Agamas are meant to totally bewilder the moving and non-moving creatures of the universe.
Sri Bhagavatin Api Evam Vadanti Vajarshe Ityadina Tadvisham Matam Namatam.
Uh Srimad Bhagavatam also rejects such opinions of tamasic puranas. Tanmatam namatam. Again, Jiva Goswami is always using these pronouns, tat, and you have to, the reader has to know, has to guess what tat's referring to. So tat here is the tamasic puranas. Tatmatam, the opinion of the tamasic puranas, namatam, is not accepted. Sri Bhagavatena api. Srimad Bhagavatam also rejects such opinions of tamasic puranas. In verses like the one beginning, thus sages speak, O saintly king. Okay, but if you don't know that verse, in the commentary I give the verse. What Krishna is saying in that verse. This is just the beginning of it. Evam vadanti vajarshe. O saintly king, that's what they say. Taridam tu Shri Krishna Sandarbe Vishishya Stapayishyamaha. And we are going to elaborately demonstrate this in Shri Krishna Sandarbha, the fourth Sandarbha. Someday we'll get to it. Swamatam tu Satyam Shaucham Dayat Shantir Ityadina Shri Prithivi Vakyena. We already read that statement by three verses spoken by Bhumi Devi to Dharma, the bull. Iti adina Shri Prithivi Vakyena Kanti Saha Ojo Balanam Api Swabhavikatvam Avyabhicharitvam Cha Darshayata Darshitam. These words, the Bhagavatam reveals its own opinions in verses such as the one beginning. It rejects the opinion that anybody could ever be superior to the Supreme Lord. The Bhagavatam reveals its own opinions in such verses as the one beginning, truth, cleanliness, compassion, and tolerance, and three verses list those qualities of the Supreme Lord. These words spoken by the goddess Earth indicate that the qualities of the Supreme Lord, including his luster and his physical, sensory, and mental strength, are inherent in him and never fail him. Nashte loke ityadina Shri Devaki Devi Vakyena cha. The Bhagavatam also shows its own opinions in Shri Devaki Devi's words beginning at the time of cosmic annihilation. I think we already dealt with that verse also, spoken by Devaki Devi. What did that verse say? Nashte loke tri parad. What is it? Let me look it up. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. Okay. Shishyate Shesha Sangya. That was back in 28.1, and we're up to 29.5 right now. Hold on a second. I messed up the formatting. Okay. Tasmad Saruktam Yadrupam Dhruvam Akritam Iti. Thus it has been justly said that his form is permanent and uncreated. That's from the verse that is the main topic of discussion of the Sanuchet. Do you see 29.1 there? Okay, I'll go back to it. Where we introduce the verse for discussion. 29.1. Yeah, I'm looking for it. Okay. First sentence. Oh, tata utpati stiti laya ityadi padye yadrupam dhruvam akritamiti. There's a verse beginning the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction, and there the words are whose form is permanent and uncreated. So that's the topic of discussion for this Anuchade. We're now at the end of the Anuchade, and the conclusion is made, yes, therefore we've properly interpreted this statement. Thus, it is an appropriate statement
that his form is permanent and uncreated. Thus it has been justly said that his form is permanent and uncreated. Sri Shukaha, the verse under discussion, which is Bhavatam 525.9, was spoken by Sri Shukadeva. We're talking about the form of the Lord. We want to first of all establish that it's eternal. Yes.
Can you repeat the first sentence of this 29.5?
There in Sanskrit or
the
in English?
Panapatala Pandama, explain this first.
I'm sorry. Just, you want me to explain?
Just say it again. Vimohaya chaha chahas jagasti.
Okay, I'll read the Sanskrit and English first sentence. The whole sentence or just the first part of the sentence? There's the sentence. Okay, the sentence has got three different quotations in it.
Ichuktam.
Up to there. Okay, yeah. Anyway, Padma Patala Konda Vaishaka Mahatmya Cha Vyamohaya Characharasya Jagataste Puranagama Ichuktam. There is also a statement in the Vaishaka Mahatmya of the Padma Puranas Patala Konda that says, these various Puranas and Agamas are meant to totally bewilder the moving and moving creatures of the universe. Okay, let's make them non-moving, the second one. Thank you for helping me find the mistake. Non-moving. The moving and the moving creatures. Okay. You want to get an exact transcription so you can sell it to Garga Muni? A double K. Well, let's look it up. Was it five what? Five. Let's check the meter. Vyamohaya chada chadasya jagataste pura. Jagataste te pura. It could be te tava and then te they. Okay, I'll just make a question. Two tays? Well, I think, no, if there's two tays, I think one of them is tava and the other one is nominative plural. But you think no? Oh, it's distributive. Okay. But we'll just have to look up the reference and make sure it's right. Anyway, we are done with 29, except for I have to read the commentary. The Puranas comprise mostly history of the universe. And the Agamas are texts teaching methods of worship to those who are not privileged to learn the performance of Vedic sacrifice. Agamas are tantras. There's Vedic worship and tantric worship. The tantras teach some way of worshiping the Supreme or of meditating for people who have no access directly to the Vedas. Agamas are a kind of tantra, especially teaching worship. Just as there are Puranas for people in each of the three modes, so similarly, there are agamas in goodness, the Vaishnav Pancharatras, as well as tantras in the other two modes for Shaivites, Shaktas, impersonalist yogis, and others. They're all agamas. In the opinion of the Vaishaka Mahatmya and Srimad Bhagavatam, the teaching of tamasic and rajasic scriptures are bewildering. After describing Shalva's apparent murder of Vasudeva in front of his son Krishna, and Krishna's apparent shock at seeing this, Shukadeva commented to Maharaj Parikshit, Evam Vadanti Rajarshe, so this is what this is about, Evam Vadanti Rajarshe, Rishayak Ke Chananvitaha, Yat Swavacho Virudyeta, Nunam tena smarantyuta. Such is the account given by some sages, O wise king. But those who speak in this illogical way are contradicting themselves, having forgotten their own previous statements. Okay. In other words, that's what rishis have given such accounts in the Puranas as what I've just told you about Krishna being bewildered about the apparent death of his father, but they're actually contradicting themselves because such a thing can't actually happen to Krishna. He can't actually be bewildered. And then he says in the next verse after that, Shukadev says, Kwa shoka moha snehova bayam va yegya sambhava kwa cha kandita vigyana gyanaishvarya stvakandita. How can lamentation, bewilderment, material affection or fear, all born out of ignorance, be ascribed to the infinite Supreme Lord, whose perception, knowledge, and power are all similarly infinite? The 29th Anuchet of Sri Krishna Sandarbha argues at length for the supremacy of Krishna in the face of various Puranic claims for one deity or another as the independent Lord. The misunderstanding of Krishna's being only an expansion of Narayan is corrected there in the 29th Anuchet of the Krishna Sandarbha. It's corrected by citing the rule of interpretation given by Sri Suta in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, third chapter of the first canto. Ete chamsha kalak pumsa krishnastu bhagavan swayam. All these are full and partial expansions of the Creator, but Krishna is the original personality of Godhead. Later in the Anuchet, it is mentioned that when the Lord acts so as to conceal his supremacy, sages interpret what he does variously according to their preconceived notions. The goddess of the earth's enumeration of Krishna's qualities, with her affirmation that they are all eternal and inseparable from him, has been cited in the commentary to text 25. So we won't give it again. Devaki's prayer to Kamsa, in which she describes him as remaining alone after the annihilation of the universe, has already been cited in text 28.1. Yeah, what's up? What did I say? Krishna? Devaki's prayer too. Yeah, prayer to Krishna. Okay. All right. Text 30. All right. The form of the Lord is eternal. What's more, now we're going to show that it's Vibhu. It's, well, how do we translate Vibhu? It can mean all powerful or all expansive. Let's see how we deal with the word Vibhu. Or how Jiva Goswami, what Jiva Goswami means by it. Well, okay. Looks like we're talking about being everywhere, being all-pervasive. Because Jiva Goswami cites another verse about Mother Yashoda from the 9th chapter of the 10th canto. Vibhutvam aha nachantar nabahir yasya na purvam napi cha param purva param bahis chantar jagato yo jagachayah tamatvatma jamavyaktam marjalingam adhoksajam gopikolu kale damna babanda prakritam yata. I'm looking to see how long this anuchet is. Seven paragraphs. Translation. That he is infinite is stated. The Supreme Lord has no interior and no exterior, no front and no rear. The universe has its front and rear, its exterior and interior, only because of him. In fact, he is the entire universe. That unmanifest person appearing in a human form is beyond the perception of the senses. Considering him to be her own son, the gopi Yashoda bound him to a wooden mortar with a rope, just like an ordinary child. So this is talking about how the Lord is everywhere. There's no inside and outside of him. But also it's talking about how he, at the same time, appeared to have a certain size and be in a certain place, and Mother Yashoda was able to tie him up in ropes. So this all-pervasiveness is not simple, impersonal all-pervasiveness. There's something more complicated about it, about how he's vibhu. He's vibhu, and at the same time, he can be in one place, in one size. Okay. More to this. Tikacha, Sridhar Swami, comments on this. Bandhanam hi bahik parivrittena damna antar avritasya bhavati. Something becomes tied up when it is enveloped within a rope that surrounds it from without. So in order to get tied up, something has to have an outside that can be surrounded, and it has to be a limited size. Otherwise, there's no rope or anything else big enough to tie it up. It has to be finite in size and have an inside and an outside in order to get tied up. Anything. Okay. Tatatra purva paravibhagavato vastuna purvato dhamma dvitva paritak pariveshtanena bhavati. Natvetad astit yaha nachantar iti. We can say this in another way, that when an object with front and rear parts is taken hold of by a rope in its front and wrapped all around, then it is tied up. So we can talk in terms of inside and outside when we're talking about enveloping, but also if you're going to tie something, you got to start from the front and go to the back, or something has to be defined as the front. You have to start from one point, go around, and reach the same point again. So it has to be front and rear to get to be tied up. When an object with front and rear parts is taken hold of by a rope in its front and wrapped all around, then it is tied up. Tie up doesn't just mean put some rope on it. It has to go all the way around. Tie up means completely. That was Mother Yashoda's problem. She couldn't get enough rope to tie him up all the way around. That, however, is not the case here. As is stated by the words beginning, who has no interior, no front and no rear. So he can't be tied up. Kimcha vyapakena vyapyasya bando bhavati tat chatra viparitam ityaha purva param iti. Furthermore, when something pervades something else, then the pervaded thing can be tied up. The thing that's bigger can tie up the thing that's smaller. But here the case is just the opposite. Krishna is the pervading thing, and everything else is pervaded by him, including all the ropes in the world. So how can any rope get around him? As is stated by the words, it's front and rear. It doesn't have a front and a rear. I'm going to delete the word it's. Sorry, hold on a second.
Okay. Kimcha. There's another kimcha. Kimcha, second reason why it's impossible is that the thing that pervades can pervade the thing it pervades, the smaller thing. The pervading can tie up or envelop the pervaded. You draw diagrams of what's surrounding what else. So what's in the inside is surrounded by what pervades it. Obviously, not the other way around. But here the situation is the other way around. Krishna is outside of it, is beyond everything. And another reason, third reason, kim cha, tadvyati viktasya cha bhavan, nabanda ityaha, jagat chaya. Another reason why he can't be tied up is that nothing else exists other than him. There is nothing else other than him to tie him up. According to the words, and who is the entire universe? Jagat chayaha. Tam marchilingam adhoksajam atmajam matva babandeti ityesha. Considering that transcendental Lord in the guise of a human to be her son, she tied him up. Amazing. Mother Yashoda managed to tie Krishna up. Anyway, first of all, we're establishing here that he is all-pervading. That's being stated as an undeniable fact. Let's read the explanation in the commentary. The word vibhu can mean all-powerful. As Sridhar Swami explained in his commentary in the Vishnu Purana 6563, which we cited in text 3.3. I hope that's the right number. Vibhum iti sarva vaibhava yuktam ityartaha. Sridhar Swami, in his commentary on that verse of the Vishnu Purana that was already quoted, he says, vibhu, or in other words, endowed with all power. Sarva vaibhava yuktam. So that's one meaning of vibhu. Okay. I have a period in the wrong place. Wait a minute. Move the period. Okay. In the metaphysics of the Vaisheshika philosophy, which is not our philosophy, but they have their complete analysis of material existence, Vaisheshika philosophy of Kanada Muni, vibhu, they use the word vibhu in the sense of infinite in size. Contrasts with Anu, atomically small in size, and Madhyama, medium-sized. This is what the way the Vaisheshika philosophers analyze the difference between these three sizes: infinite size, infinitesimal size, and in-between size. All things are one of these three sizes. For the Vaisheshikas, it is axiomatic that only medium-sized things are visible, have parts, and are temporary, and that anything either infinite or infinitesimal is imperceptible, without parts, and eternal. The Sandarbha here uses vibhu in this sense of without limits in both space and time. That's the meaning of vibhu here. Vibhu expresses a positive idea. Okay, we're defining it negatively, but actually vibhu is expressing a positive idea. Derived from its root verb, vibhu, to expand one's power, like vibhava. But the underlying idea of infinity is basically negative. Infinity means no limit, without any limit. It's a negative idea. How big is infinity? How do you explain infinity? All you can do is explain it negatively. No end to it. But you can't tell me it's this number. This is infinity. You can't define it except negatively. Although the word vibhu is positive. The idea of vibhu is positive. but it's representing infinity, which is a negative idea. The underlying idea of infinity is basically negative. Thus, in this verse, Krishna is described as simply having no inside, no outside, no front, and no rear. He pervades all space and exists forever. That's the positive counterpart. But the verse says, no inside, no outside, no front, and no rear. Like you start to build a house, and you only build the framework and stop there, and you have no more money. So the house has no walls, no windows. In effect, no inside, no outside, no front, no back. You know, it's just not, you know, just began to build it. But that's not what we're saying about Krishna. We're talking negative to show that not that he's nowhere or nothing, but that he's everything and everywhere. And he has no limits. He's infinite. Okay. Now 30.2. Jagatcha yad ityatra yasya karanasya vyatirekena karyasya jagato vyatirekaksyad. The words in the verse describing Mother Yashoda's tying up Krishna, the two verses, the words, and who is the entire universe, imply the following. Don't say it directly, but they imply that if the cause of the universe were not what it is, the universe itself would not be what it is. Iti tadananyasya jagatas tadshaktyaiva shaktes tadamshamsharupaya rajva katam tasya bandak syat. How thus the universe is non-different from him and has its own energy only by his energy. Okay? There's an integral... The universe is not Krishna, but there's a very intimate relationship between the universe and Krishna. It's non-different from him in this sense. The universe is what it is because Krishna is what he is, because he has his particular energies, and that makes the universe what it is. It has its energy only by his energy. Whatever potency, whatever ability to do anything and to be anything in particular, the universe has to possess particular qualities and to perform various functions. The universe and its components have these energies by Krishna's innate energies, not independently. So, question. Then how can he be bound by a rope which is only a partial expansion of a partial expansion of his energy? All the energies of the universe come from him. That means he's absolutely in control. How can any energy control him? How can he be tied up by a rope? A rope is just an expansion of his maya, which is an expansion of his energy, an expansion of an expansion. How can such a subordinate, an inferior thing, control him? Nahi vachnim archisho dahe yur iti bhavaha. Certainly the flames of a fire do not consume the fire itself. Everything that comes near the fire gets burned up. But the fire doesn't consume itself. The fire may eventually be used up, but it's not because of being burned. It's because of running out of fuel. It's not that the fire gets destroyed by fire. It gets destroyed by lack of oxygen. But the fire can burn all day and it doesn't get burned. It can burn a whole city, but the fire thrives by that burning. It's not destroyed by the burning. So, how can the rope, which is just an energy of Krishna's energy, how can that affect, have a control or effect over him? Tam marcha lingam ityadau tika kritam ayam abhiprayaha. With regards to the word's beginning, appearing in a human form, the commentator has in mind. We already read just the previous paragraph what Sridhar Swami said. Now, Goswami is telling us what Sridhar Swami had in mind when he said that. His abhipraya, his inner intention. Okay? His inner intention that he's replying to a particular purvapaksha, particular objection, which is, Nanu sarva vyapakam katam babanda nahi brahmanda golakadikam apikaschid batanati. The objection is, how could she tie him up who is all-pervading? No one has ever tied up the ball of the universe and everything along with it. Nobody can do that. And Krishna is beyond the universe. Okay. Answer? Tatraha. Marjalingam. Manushya Vigraham. This is answered. I lost the place. This is answered by the phrase, appearing in a human form, meaning having a human body. Okay, but another question then. Tarhi katam vyapakatvam. Then how is he all-pervading if he has a human form? Okay. Tatraha adhoksajam adak kritam indriyajam gyanam yena tam. Answer is that he is adhoksaja, meaning the one who pushes down knowledge derived from the senses. Or in other, that's where Prabhupada gets his explanation in the Krishna book. It's coming out of here, Kramasandarbha. Because Prabhupada, I think, Marjalinga Adhoksajam, I think it's there in the ninth chapter of the Krishna book, Prabhupada talks about adhoksaja, meaning pushing down empirical knowledge, something like that. It's coming from here, from the Bhagavad Sandarbha that Jiva Goswami later copied into the Krama Sandarbha for that chapter of the 10th canto. His explanation of adhoksajam. Adhak kritam indriya gyam gyanam yena tam. It's a bahuvri compound, tritiya. That by which the aksajam is made adha. The aksaja, empirical knowledge, is pushed down. It's put in an inferior position. In other words, it's overruled. The Lord is what he is in defiance of empirical knowledge. Something cannot be both all-pervading and then be tied up. But he's at Hoktija. He defies the laws of nature. Adhoksajam. This is answered that he is at Hoksaja. The one who pushes down knowledge derived from the senses. Sarvendriya gyanagocharam pratyakshadi pramanayar achintya swarupam ityartaha. Or in other words, he is inaccessible to all sensory knowledge. And that means to say, his essential identity is inconceivable by the ordinary means of knowing. Sensory perception and so on. Ordinary means of knowing are, pratyaksha anuman, or ordinary. Shabda, if it's the right shabda, is special. Shabda praman will let you know the absolute truth. Shastra mulatvat. Shastra yonitvat. The source of actual understanding of the absolute truth is the shastra, the shabda. Shabda praman can give you understanding of the absolute truth. But the more ordinary means of pratyaksha and anuman are inadequate for understanding the transcendental adhoksaja reality.
So he is inaccessible to all sensory knowledge, including the extension of sensory knowledge by anuman, subsequent logic. Tasmat tad akaratve pi tasmin vibhutvam astyeveti bhava. Therefore, the idea is, even though he has this particular form, still he's infinite. So he's both, inconceivably, both infinite and finite, all-pervading and also in a particular place and time. The limitation is not only in terms of space, it's also in terms of time. Krishna is somewhere and he's not somewhere else, and he's there at some time and not there at another time. That's his becoming finite by his inconceivable energy. Adhoksa jatvat eva vyaktatvam api vyakyatam iti tan no dritam. Since the very fact of his being adhoksaja explains how he is unmanifest, the commentator does not raise the question. We can also discuss how the Supreme's form is unmanifest. But just explain, it's enough to say that it's beyond ordinary perception. That's what unmanifest means. You don't perceive it. So he's totally beyond ordinary perception. Therefore, it goes without saying, without further explanation, that he's avyakta. He can be visible, but he's not visible in ordinary ways. Okay, and then the commentary on this. How can Krishna be captured by a rope? A mere expansion of his material energy, which itself is only an expansion of his Svarupa Shakti. To explain this, one must fathom the mysteries of the Supreme Lord's Svarupa Shakti. Mundane scientists interested only in the phenomena produced from this Shakti's limited expansion of material nature can never begin to explain it. Here the term vyapakatva, all-pervasiveness, and vibhutva, infinity, are used equivalently. One is negative, one is positive, but they both amount to the same thing. To be everywhere and to have no limit are equivalent. Krishna is present everywhere, but still his mother could tie him up in his human form. How he can be both infinite and finite cannot be understood empirically. He is adhoksaja, beyond the scope of sensory experience. He may be adhoksaja in another sense, invisible. For the impersonalists, they call him invisible because the absolute truth is imperceptible. And even though Krishna is visible, he's not the real absolute truth. What he really is Brahman, which is invisible. That's for the impersonalists. But that's not how his parents, Nanda and Yashoda, see it. They're dealing with the absolute truth on other terms than the impersonalists. To understand this mystery of the Lord being both finite and infinite, infinite and finite, one must take shelter of the revelation given in Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. No one will be able ever to understand this mystery otherwise. The impersonalists, with all their study of the Vedanta Sutra, can understand the all-pervasiveness, but not how the all-pervasive can also be pervaded. That they can never understand. The Mayavadis can never understand the mystery of Mother Yashoda's tying up Krishna. Not actually. They can give their interpretation, but they don't really understand the pastime. Only by the mercy of the Vaishnavas and of the Vaishnava Shastra, Gita, and Bhagavatam is it possible to understand these mysteries. Okay, we stop for now. We're not quite halfway through this anuchet, but we'll continue. Okay, if you've got questions, just send them to me, please. Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.